Welcome to Open Minded Healing, where the topic is alternative health. We will be having conversations with the practitioners that offer a variety of alternative healing modalities, as well as everyday people who have recovered their health outside of the MD's office. Join us with an open mind for conversations that may provide solutions to healing your own body on a mental, physical, and spiritual level. I'm Marla Miller. Let's begin. Welcome back to Open Minded Healing. Today, I'm going to be speaking to my guest, Jenna Brocious, about ways that you can overcome adversity from childhood. Welcome, Jenna.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm glad to discuss this topic of mental health and childhood trauma because I think it's so much more prevalent than maybe people even know. Because they don't always necessarily want to tell people about it, or they don't maybe have the words to explain what they've gone through. So do you want to describe a little bit about what your childhood was like? What was creating the trauma in your life as a child?
Okay. So my mom was 22 and got pregnant with me. So she was unmarried and just kind of went for it. So then throwing a child into that non-stability was really a hard thing for both of us. But really, she was an alcoholic, a narcissist. She dated a motorcycle gang member who's in jail for murder. She's been married four times. I just found my dad for the first time at 36. So there was a lot of roller coaster ups and downs, highs and lows that I had to overcome and really just find the strength within myself to pick up myself and move on in life because it wasn't always easy, but I knew what was going on around me was not okay.
What did that look like for you with the emotions of a small child? What was your daily routine maybe as a child?
Yeah, bedtime was the scariest time for me as a child because I didn't know if I was going to be woken up in the middle of the night to physical abuse and screaming and yelling, or if I would actually have to call the cops myself on what was going on. So bedtime was always the most fearful for me. Going to school was like a relief because it was my safe space.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. So when you went to school, did anyone recognize something was going on with you or you just blended in?
Well, here's where I became a people pleaser. I would wear my best outfit to school the next day if there had been a big fight at home because I almost wanted to look like perfect or mask the hurt that I was feeling inside by having a nice outfit on. So that was one of the little ways my little self disguised what was going on at home. And my teachers actually did eventually find out what was going on. And I was called into the counselor's office many times as I got older.
So when would you say they first recognized that there was a problem?
In fifth grade, my teacher asked me if I was going to get a warmer jacket for winter because I wasn't wearing a proper jacket for how much snow and how cold it was outside. So I think that was the big red flag for the school.
And what about your attention span or grades or behavior at school? Did any of that seem off to them?
So I actually was a pretty well-behaved girl and I followed all the rules because I didn't want to get in trouble and have to be at home. So I wanted to be anywhere else other than that. So I was a very sweet little kid. But I actually, to this day, have a really hard time with spelling because my mom never helped me with my spelling tests or like practicing my homework or doing any of those things because she was preoccupied with her own issues. So yeah, schoolwork was a tough one for me and I've had to really overcome those the last couple of years.
Now, what about when you would come home from school? I know bedtime was the worst, you say. What about when you came home from school? And what about even just simple things like having dinner on the table? Was that a better time right after school?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my house would get violent or disruptive when there was alcohol. So normally alcohol started happening around dinner time, and then that's where it would always go downhill. But for the most part, my mom was home when I got home from school. It was just the night times that you just never knew what was going to happen in the household once the alcohol started to kick in.
Well, I can imagine you were always on guard. Your nervous system must have been on edge continuously. And I'm wondering also about the male presence in your home. I don't know when your mother remarried, but you talked about the gang member. How did that play out for you on top of your mother drinking and being narcissistic?
So my mom went through a new relationship every 4 years is kind of her track number. So all of us siblings are 4 years apart because she would find a new man and move on and continue on. But yet the first few guys my mom was with, the first two husbands my mom had were actually pretty decent guys that were surprised by my mom's actions because I think she hid them for as long as she possibly could. And then the dark side would always come out in the end. But the older we got, the worse the men got, which thankfully she never had any children after with those really bad guys. But I think after she got out of the first two marriages that she had children with, the next two were very physical and very abusive. And so it just got harder to be home. And I also got a little bit older. So I was really able to kind of take care of myself in some way. I had to grow up fast. I would do a lot of sleepovers at my friend's house who would ever take me in because I just knew Saturday nights, you just never knew what explosion was going to come after having gone to the bars and being out and all those things. So the older I got, the more I understood what was going on in my household and would always try to escape in any way I could.
Well, that's good that you had that self-preservation to know to get out of the house at those particular times.
I feel very lucky that I was very aware of my surroundings.
Yeah, that's good, especially for a young child. Like when you're so little, to try and think of a place to be outside of your home, even though home is the scariest place to be, it's also scary to be out there in the world and try and take care of yourself at such a young age.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting the different techniques you already started implementing from such a young age. Like you said, even wearing the nice outfit, you had enough of an idea of what that might help you with, or by being not a problem in school so that you were welcome at school and you weren't sent home. It's incredible how the brain works to survive like that, even as a young child. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the nice clothes were definitely a disguise, which is sad that I think about it now in that way, because I didn't think about it then.
Yeah. Well, so alcohol is one thing, but then being a narcissist is another. So what were some of the behaviors that now looking back were very narcissistic that your mom was demonstrating?
I think that my mom always made choices that benefited her, but weren't ever putting us in a safe situation. So it would be like going to the Hell's Angels clubhouse where the cops were staked out across the street and the men that were hiding from the cops went through the back door and down into the basement to hide. As a mother now, I would never put my child in that situation by any means. So it was just a constant selfish decisions that she was making that weren't to benefit us, but only to benefit her.
So did she also, as a narcissist, want you to look a certain way or be a certain way, or it would reflect on her? Did she have that way of thinking?
No, that was like never really the situation. It was more of I was there to clean up her messes because she would put herself in a bad situation and then somehow I would be the one to have to clean it up. Even my little self, I was the one cleaning up the mess at the end of the day.
So what does that mean, cleaning up her messes? What specifically were you expected to do?
So I remember she overheard me talking to somebody about how I felt like she was an alcoholic. And so she proceeded to break all of her wine bottles because she was upset that I called her an alcoholic. So then she proceeded to tell me I had to clean up the mess that she literally I had to clean up the glass and the wine that she broke all over the place. So that was when I was a little bit older in my teenage years, and that did not end well because I was not going to do that. I was not cleaning up something she broke when she chose to break it. But the biggest light bulb for me realizing that she didn't care about me in some way was freshman year of college, the night before my first college final, which is such a big deal to any person that's taking their first college final. She called me at 2 a.m. to go bail her out of jail because she had just beaten up her ex-husband's girlfriend. And for me, as a child, I was like, you obviously don't care about my success or me just getting a good night's sleep so I can go to school tomorrow and be prepared for my day. You'd rather bother me to come bail you out of jail, which is not important. And you got yourself in there. So why do I have to get you out? And this was the biggest thing. If I don't start creating boundaries now with her, this could potentially be my whole life. And I wasn't going to allow her to control that.
Yeah. Now, did you have siblings? You said she had other children.
I did. I had a brother who was 4 years younger than me, and I had a sister who was 8 years younger than me. But my mom lost custody of both of them. I think when I was about 10, my mom lost custody of both of them.
And why did she not lose custody of you? Just because you didn't know who your dad was at that time?
Yeah, their dads both fought for them to get out, and there was nobody to fight for me. So I kind of just got left behind. And I've actually, both of those men have apologized to me for not helping getting me out, but they were just so concerned about themselves and their child at the moment, they couldn't have the capacity to also fight for me. And I have no hard feelings towards them for that situation. I completely understand what was going on.
So when you were in college and you're finally having that light bulb moment that you need boundaries and you're tired of putting up with this behavior from your mom, what was the first thing that you did for yourself to lead you in a better direction?
Well, I didn't bail her out of jail.
Good for you.
Bail her out of jail, I'll tell you that much. I let her sit there and get herself out. At that point, because I was living in a small town, Spokane, Washington, I really realized that I had to get out of the small town. And if I didn't get out of the small town, I would maybe get stuck in this loop forever. I get stuck in her life. My life might turn out the way, not in the same way, but maybe in some ways it would turn out the same. And so for me, I just had to move and create the biggest boundary I possibly could with that woman. And it was moving to Arizona and getting states away from her.
That's, again, amazing that you had the courage to do that and go against your mom and do something that was really for yourself and didn't have anything to do with her. I mean, it did in that you were creating a boundary with her, but
right.
didn't involve yeah. her input. So the first step you take toward healing yourself was to move to Arizona to create this boundary with your mom. So how did that go? And did you feel any guilt or were you just over it at that point?
So that happened freshman year. So that was like spring. So we got out that summer and I went and visited a girlfriend in Arizona and she's like, you'll love it here. Come visit. And I went and visited. And I moved down 3 months later. So I worked my tail off for those next 3 months to just make as much money as I possibly could. And I had a friend that was driving down there at the same time. So I literally hopped in their car with as much stuff as I could take for myself. You know, it was really scary and I didn't know what was going to happen. All I knew is that I could work as hard as I possibly could to put a roof over my head and get a car and survive. And God willing, I was able to find a job and really support myself at the age of 19 and just make it happen. So I feel very lucky that I got out because I know it's not, makes me want to cry. I know it's not easy to get out, but when you can, it's so worth it in the end.
Yeah, well, that's why I was wondering if there was guilt associated with it or not. I mean, even though there shouldn't be, because you were doing what you needed to do to survive. But I feel like a lot of people, because of how the parent manipulated them or made them feel guilty, they find it harder to do something like that. So did you feel, oh, good, I'm in the free and clear now? Or was there any lingering effects from that move?
You know, I didn't allow her to have any control. So I left with what I had and that's all I was taking. And I didn't allow her to have any help in my movement because that would have given her that opportunity to hold something over my head. And I just took every option that she would have had to hold something over my head away. And just survived on my own, you know?
Well, I think that is so courageous. And also, it shows you really had an understanding, it seems, that this was your mom's issue. This did not reflect on you. It was a separate problem, mental health problem, or whatever you would call it at that point. But you were able to differentiate those two things. This is my mom and I should feel a certain way from, no, this is a person with a serious problem and it does not have to do with me. Is that right?
So, yeah, no, totally. Once I started my healing process, I also recognized that my mom's childhood was horrible as well. And so I started to have compassion for her because I realized she didn't know any better and she came from the same situation.
So I know you had compassion for your mom because you began to understand she had a childhood similar to yours. Did that understanding bring any feelings along with it, like you felt sorry for her, or was it just you could look at it with an understanding?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of my five steps is really being able to look at them and their experience and realizing that she did the best that she could with what she had. So I really can't be mad at her at this point anymore because my job is to do better at this point. It's all generational trauma. My grandma experienced the same thing. My mother experienced the same thing. I experienced the same thing. It is my turn because I choose to change it. And that was really part of that five steps of getting over that narcissist is really recognizing, well, she didn't know any better.
Yeah, that's so great that you are able to turn a generational problem around, because some people, it just keeps repeating, as you said. And, you know, it takes a strong person to be able to have that compassion for prior generations, but to also say, this is where I'm drawing the line. I will not continue this for future generations. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
Really amazing that you did that.
Yeah. I mean, once I got pregnant, my healing journey really started because I became a mother myself. And so then I had to dive deeper because I was so angry at her all over again once I became a mother, because how could you do this to a little person that you love so much? And now I know what it means to love that little person so much. So it really wasn't until I became a mother that I had to start this process of healing, because I wasn't going to allow her to affect my life anymore. So I had to find that forgiveness.
I think that is always a moment when you have your own child, like you said, that you realize what that love really means and you want better. Even if you couldn't want it for yourself, you want it for that little child that you love so much.
100%. Yeah.
So what would you say the steps were to getting beyond this traumatic childhood? The first was setting the boundaries, right? By moving to Arizona and creating physical space with your mom. Were you still in communication by phone at that time? Or what did those boundaries look like?
You know what? It's so funny because we would talk occasionally, but she didn't come and visit me in Arizona till I had lived here for like 10 years, which is wild to me now, because if my child moved out of state, I'd probably be there every quarter. to like see them, touch them, check on them. How are you doing? And get involved in their environment. So, you know, it's again just that she was living in her narcissistic bubble and now she had one less responsibility. And so really is out of sight, out of mind. And I was fine with that because I was in my safe own new little bubble that I had created for myself. So we've always had a very small relationship since I moved away. But for me, that's again my safe boundary, that's where I hold her at, is at that distance.
Yeah. Well, I guess you were fortunate in that way, honestly, that she wasn't constantly calling and trying to come in and push those boundaries that you were trying to create. So that's not a bad thing.
I think she was just happy to be a free bird and have one less mouth to feed.
Oh my gosh. I know it's hard to imagine when you experience something so different with your own child to understand that, I'm sure for you. So beyond setting a boundary, a physical boundary, and sounds like emotional as well, what else did you implement to help yourself heal?
I think it's really important to actually acknowledge what has happened. I think it's so important to acknowledge that you've been hurt and really sit with those feelings, as bad as it is. For me, journaling has been a huge place for me to release a lot of that. So I think being able to journal our emotions, because I wasn't always comfortable talking to people about what was going on in my house or how I was feeling. So I think just allowing myself to really write out those stories of bad things, or just expressing it in a way that nobody really has to know besides myself, has been like probably the biggest second step I could take, was just really getting it out of my body in a certain way. And for me, that was journaling.
That is great. I've heard that journaling is really effective. Mm-hmm. Expressing yourself and without having to, like you said, tell anyone about it.
I still to this day journal if something happens that I have that hamster wheel running in my head and I can't shut it off. Really, journaling will help me to let go of that experience or emotion and just kind of move on again with my life. So I tell everybody it's the best.
Well, and do you revisit it, or you're like, it's on paper, it's out, and I'm never looking at that again?
I actually journaled when I was a little girl, and I've read my journals from when I was a little girl, just because I was curious, what was my thought process then and how was I really feeling? So I have read some of them, but not all of them.
That must be very interesting to see the different ages and how you expressed yourself all throughout this time. That would be a good book in itself, comparing different ages and how you felt.
I'm working on that right now.
I'm sure that would be fascinating and so helpful to so many people out there struggling with this same thing. So what else were you able to do for yourself?
The third step that I thought was really important is really acknowledging that little girl that's hurt still inside of me. and really just working. Oh, I could cry talking about it. But it's really just allowing that little girl to know that she's safe and that she's loved and that everything's okay now. And really, I still get triggered at this point in my healing process. And I've been doing this for 8 years now. I still get triggered every once in a while. So I have to go back in. And I was just telling somebody earlier, I put my little girl self in the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs house.
Yeah.
Because I feel like for me, that was like a safe place. So whenever I get triggered, even to this day, I will put my little self in their house and be like, you're protected and safe from the Seven Dwarfs. They'll help you. And you are in the light and the love. And we're not in the darkness anymore. But healing that little self within us, I think, is such a hard part, but such a huge part of overcoming the narcissists and the trauma.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is so sweet. I could see the comfort in that as you're describing it. Being Snow White in that house with the dwarfs protecting her. That is really sweet.
Yeah.
I guess it's a good thing for children to have a safe place in their minds that they can go to when they're in a traumatic situation on a daily basis like that.
Yeah, I think everybody has something that comforts them in some weird way. I mean, I would lay in bed every night and dream about being a princess in a big castle and not being stuck in my house. And I think, honestly, I've become such a great manifester because I had to like take myself out of the situation often. And so I would daydream all the time about fun, crazy, amazing experiences. And I actually get to kind of live that life now. So it all has worked in my favor in the end. But yeah, as a little girl, it was daydreaming to get myself out of those dark places.
I'm so glad you had that creativity. And again, the thought process to manage your situation at such a young age.
You know, I feel like I had no choice.
I know you were in total survival mode.
Yeah.
Well, I have heard of people doing different types of things like breath work and where they go back to their childhood and they tell their younger self, hold my hand, I'm getting you out of here, I'm taking you out of this place. And it's very emotional, but effective. So I can see how that is so emotional to look back at your younger self, or if you imagine your own child at that age and put them in your place and see how you would feel if they were experiencing what you did. It's got to be quite an emotional journey.
Definitely. No. I don't want to put him there ever.
Yeah. I think a lot of people think that because someone's your parent, you can't disconnect from them. But if that is not serving you in this life and they're abusive in any way, you have every right to choose who's in your life and who's not. So I'm glad that you recognize that and were able to act on it without guilt. Also, the journaling, I think, is such a phenomenal idea as well. What else were you doing at this point?
So really, at this point, having become a mother and really starting to be triggered and acknowledging all these things that I maybe had not thought about in a really long time, but now I have this little person I'm taking care of, I had to make a conscious decision to do better than her. I'm a mother who gets frustrated and wants to blow steam out of her ears, but the way I respond has to be different than the way my mother responded. My mother would just slap me across the face if I did something she didn't like or something I said that she thought was wrong. So for me to not be physical with my child is such a huge thing that I also still think is healing my little person as well. When I get to tuck my son into bed every night and he gets to sleep in a safe, clean bed and he's going to sleep well, those things I still think are healing myself because that isn't something I had. So to be able to give him that opportunity to have that, I think is such a big deal. When we're able to acknowledge what our parents did and just change the actions in general, that's another huge step that we can do to move away from what we had.
I'm curious how you did that because a lot of people out there have that experience. And even though they say they want to change or be different than their parents, they still do the same thing. It's just like an automatic reaction. So how were you able to not only think you want to be different, but how do you actually change your behavior?
Well, we don't drink in our house during the week. I mean, we're very social drinkers, but my mom would drink a bottle of wine every night. So there's really no drinking in our house during the week, which is just a health factor in general, too. So when my son was three and I got really mad and I started screaming and yelling, my son covered his ears and I was like devastated because I saw his reaction to my reaction. And that just took me back to my childhood like instantly. And it was like, ooh, what am I doing? I can do better than this. And so it's really having to manage myself sometimes. You know, if it means mom needs a 5-minute break in her closet because I need to breathe it out and then we can come back and revisit the conversation, that's what it is for me, because I don't want to respond the way that my mother used to, because I don't want to teach him that. So if it means I need to take a breath and I need to step away for a few minutes and then we revisit the situation, that's how I handle things moving forward, because I don't want him to respond like that.
Yeah. So did you try anything like therapy or EMDR, or was there anything else you were doing to help yourself solidify this new choice?
I've done all the things. I've done all of the meditations. I've done breath work. I do polarity massages. I see a Reiki master every other week. I am fully dedicated to changing my life and my son's life for the future. So I am all for anything that can help us acknowledge the past, let go of the past, and move forward in a positive way. I think that we are all on a journey that needs a little guidance. And it'd be silly for me to sit here and say that I don't need any help, because I still need help and it's still going to come up and new things are going to come up because I've gotten rid of the old thing. So it's like a never-ending journey, and I just have to be very kind and loving to myself and knowing that that's going to happen, and then just taking the steps to have the right support to really help you move through it.
I love that. I love that you made a definite decision and embraced the idea that you do need help. You know, everyone needs support. Everyone needs help. And things evolve and change, and there's always something new. Maybe a new way of healing will pop up. And the fact that you're very open to that and willing to do the work is amazing.
I've gotten myself this far, so I'm not going to give up now.
I'm sure it helps also to see the results of your work when you see your child happy or wanting to hug you or kiss you or laugh with you. That's got to be inspiring, I imagine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%, yes.
Now, what about your husband? Did he understand your full background, your childhood history, and how was he supporting you?
I am always very honest with my background. I actually think it scared away a few suitors, because I do have a lot that I've had to overcome and it's still going on in my family. I just choose to not participate. He is the most kind, gentle, loyal man I could have ever found. And God put him on my path for a reason, because he is just, he's here to support me. But he also has had a little bit of childhood trauma. And I think us together have really been able to support each other in overcoming that. His father was an alcoholic, and then his mom just swept every issue under the rug. So nothing was spoken about in their house. So for me, being such a openly verbal, open book, I want to talk about it, I want to feel the emotion and I want to move through it, at first was a little hard for him, but now he's very much used to it. And we worked on the alcoholism that came on both sides to change that for our future and our child's future. So I think in the end, we're both here helping each other just in different ways.
It sounds like that. That's great. It's interesting how you matched up when he didn't communicate and you really communicate, and how you can kind of meet in the middle and really work through things, because shoving it under the rug is not helpful for sure.
Shoving it under the rug, it boils up under my skin. I actually became my mother-in-law's mouthpiece at family events, because she would complain to me about stuff and then I would see it and I would just say something, because why aren't we talking about it? So I've had to learn my lesson in being everybody else's mouthpiece. That's not my job. And it took me quite a few years to figure it out that it's not my job. It's not my problem. If it's your problem, it's your choice to speak about it or not. But I'm not here to talk for everybody. I've helped the family a little bit move forward in the good ways, hopefully. I know at first they did not like it. But I think that we all have to work together at the end of the day, because those are the grandparents to my son. So I want them to just be as happy and functioning as they possibly can be at this point in their lives. So I'm glad that we are able to come together and work through some of this stuff. But over-communication is never a bad thing.
Well, it's better than walking on eggshells and never knowing what to expect in any given moment. So was there anything that your husband brought to the table that was really supportive and sweet when it came to dealing with your family issues?
I think him just being so consistent and showing up for me when he said he was going to show up for me was something I had never seen before in any person. other than like my grandmother, and there's like a few people, but really him just showing up consistently like I had never seen before made me recognize that that's somebody that I want to be my partner. Because if they show up for me now, think about how they're going to show up for my child or our family or whatever it could possibly be down the road. And so that was such a huge moment for me. When he said he was going to call at 7, he called at 7. If he said he was going to bring me a coffee, he brought me a coffee. There was never a backing out or making an excuse. And he had such loyal, good friends from like elementary school, which I so appreciated that he held those relationships so important to his heart that he never let them go and was always willing to work on them. And by the way, those are things I need to learn, because if somebody pushes me the wrong direction or makes me feel uncomfortable, I'll just back away and never talk to them again. That's a trigger. I'm out of here. And he's really taught me how to hold on to like good, solid relationships and work through things, because I want to be a bigger, better person. And that is part of that.
Well, that's a pretty big contribution, I would say, he made to the relationship for sure. So was there another thing that you've employed?
Yes. And the last thing is I changed my perspective to the world is for me, not against me. And I might have had to survive for many, many years, but now I'm allowed to thrive. And I think just being able to adjust ourselves out of that survival mode and now into thriving mode is a really, really hard thing to see and accomplish. But I think if you can change it, you're kind of set free from all of the narcissism that you had to deal with. So I choose to move through my day with ease and flow and love and grace for myself and for other people. And I've really just had to see the world in a different light, because you can get really stuck in survival for a really long time in a really dark place. And so I just feel very blessed that I was able to come out of that survival and now thrive.
That's a very good mindset to have. I was just talking to someone about that yesterday. We were talking about how two people could have the same thing happen to them, like something that might be perceived as a bad thing, but the way they deal with it and address it can be so different based on that mentality, whether you think the universe is for you or you think it's against you. Some people stay in victim mode for everything. I mean, it could be anything. They get pulled over for a ticket or whatever it is. And if they're thinking, right, everyone's against me, life is against me, you know, it changes the whole trajectory of how their life is going to go, as opposed to someone like, well, what is the lesson here? Or the universe is for me. There's some positive thing about this, and go from there.
Totally. I also see it now in a way of like, if something doesn't go my way or the way I had planned or hoped it would go, I just kind of sit back now and I go, okay, the universe must have something bigger and better coming my way, because that didn't work out. So instead of looking at it again as a negative, it didn't go my way, think about, oh, maybe something cooler and bigger and better is actually going to happen, because that's how it was supposed to be the whole time. God's plan is always better than our plan. We just have these like mini human ideas of what we think's next. And then he like gives us this beautiful bouquet of flowers instead. And we're like, oh, that was great. Why did I get so upset about something that actually worked out even better?
I know. I think a lot of times it's redirection. Sometimes you're prioritizing certain things and then something happens and it makes you redirect your life and reprioritize and find what's truly important. And it turns out to be this great thing that happened. It's a blessing instead of a curse.
Yeah, I can look back and see how I lived and it was fine and okay. But I knew that there was something bigger and better out there. I knew that this world was larger than just my small hometown. And so I had to get out and I had to see what was there. And I'm willing to take on challenges now with more ease. When something bad would happen before, I would fight it and get angry. It would turn into a bigger negative. But now when something bad happens, I kind of just accept it as a challenge, because I know the other side's going to be beautiful, and the pain and the agony that might come with that challenge is so worth it in the end, because there's just some sort of beautiful payoff in the end if you can really work through that pain and struggle. So now I just love a good challenge.
Well, yeah, I would think overcoming everything you did, and now you have this beautiful life with a whole new trajectory for your son and a loving relationship. Mm-hmm. You've seen, okay, it started off looking really bad and scary, but you've seen the other side and how beautiful it can look. But I'm glad that you were able to turn it around and learn these lessons and invite love and happiness into your life rather than continue living like your mom has continued to live. I do want to mention, you had talked about meeting your dad at a certain point. How old were you and how did that come about?
I actually met my dad 2 years ago. So I'm 38. I met him at 36. My husband got me 23andMe. I actually found a first cousin on there. So her dad would be my uncle. And so I sent her a message on 23andMe and she actually did not respond for a year.
Oh.
Which if you think about it, you go on once you get your results and then you kind of don't go back and look at it again. Why would you for the most part? And so she finally responded back and she goes, well, I would only have one uncle and this is his name. Please don't tell him I gave you his name. And I was like, of course, no problem. Not a big deal. And this is how the universe works. And I love it. I just like laugh when these things happen now. But so my husband's company, I ran my dad's name through the background checking thing for his company. And it popped up that he lived in Seattle when I was born. All these things just kind of like checked the boxes.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, we're going to send him a letter in the mail. So I sent him a letter on Wednesday and it was very short and sweet. I think he might be my father. I live in Scottsdale. I'm happily married. I would just like for health reasons to maybe meet you or have a test. And so I sent it on a Wednesday. And Sunday morning, I'm getting phone calls that say Seattle, Washington on my caller ID. And I was like, oh, like this moment has come for the first time in my life. And I'm kind of like freaking out, really freaking out. And my husband goes, you can't send that letter and not answer the telephone, Jenna. Answer the phone. And I was like, yeah. I can't do it. And so it went to voicemail. And the voicemail was like, I'm going to keep calling until you answer because I need to know everything about you.
Oh,
I was like, oh, geez.
Oh
okay.
Gosh.
So we called again and I answer and I'm like, hello. And we kind of start talking. But here's the thing. I had sent out two other paternity tests since I've turned 18 and they both came back negative. And knowing that through 23andMe, we had a connection, obviously, I was still very nervous and he wanted to know everything. And I go, here's the deal. Let me send you a paternity test. And then once we get that paternity test, we can further this conversation. I just really don't want to jump ahead again and get my feelings hurt.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, okay. And this is, again, the universe. I sent him a paternity test. It should have taken 2 weeks. It took 5 days. They were just like ready to give me the results. So within 5 days, I found out he was my father. And he is a sweet man married to a beautiful woman. And they have two children. And he lives in Seattle still, and it's all as well. You know, the weird part about it is I never had a dad, and I never lacked it because I never knew what I was missing because I never had it in a sense.
Yeah.
So now I'm still trying to figure out how he fits in my life because I've never had that space for him. So that's where I'm kind of at with it right now. It's a very interesting place.
That is so interesting. So did he know you existed?
He had no idea.
Oh, and how did he feel about it? It sounds like he was very excited to learn that you were his daughter.
He felt horrible that he didn't know I existed. It was pretty much like a drunken one-night stand kind of situation. And that was the end of it. My mom had given me a list of 5 names when I turned 18 of who could potentially be my dad. And his name was on that list. But every time I went to look him up on Facebook, he looked too nice and too good to potentially be my dad. So I just looked at all the other like skis bags instead of the actual nice guy.
Oh my gosh. That is amazing that you disregarded it because he looked too nice. Well, you deserve to have a nice father. So I'm glad it worked out that way. Were you able to meet him in person yet?
Yeah, we actually, again, how the universe works, he came out the only weekend we both had available. It was Father's Day weekend.
Wow.
So we met on Father's Day weekend.
My gosh. And that was 2 years ago that you met him?
Yeah. We've seen each other twice since then. So yeah, we're slowly trying to figure it out. I mean, he has a family, so I don't really want to step on anybody's toes by any means. And so I'm just allowing it to work out however it's supposed to without any pressure or expectations, because that's how I'll just get my feelings hurt. So. Just trying to have good flow with it.
Well, that's so great. And I'm sure he's trying to be respectful and go at your pace as well. But it's so great that you found him and that he was so open to meeting you and really seems to care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's like a whole different experience for me, is to have a parent who's really wanting to know all the answers and the questions and like be involved. And obviously I have a son, so it's his first grandchild. And so he's very excited about that as well. So it's been a really cool experience so far.
I'm so happy for you that you found him. And also that you found him at this stage in life when you've worked through a lot of the issues from your past. So you were able to greet him maybe with a more positive mindset or more healed version of yourself. And you're ready at this point to bring something good into your life after you've worked through all the tough times.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's been really nice. Like, for me, my son doesn't really have grandparents on my side because I don't allow my mom to really be involved. So he's like, oh, I have another grandpa. He's all excited that there's another person here to like love him and play with him and have a good time. So it's been cute to see the two of them play together. Oh, do you want to hear the craziest story about all of this?
Yes, of course.
So this is the nurture versus nature kind of story. So I have always, and I don't know why, make this very silly sound when I drop stuff. I'm like, ooh. Like something bad's happened. And my husband, when he first met me, he would always be like, oh my God, is everything okay? What just happened? And now he doesn't even respond to the sound because he knows I just like did something. But my dad was over at my house and he dropped something and he made the same sound. And I was like, hold on, wait, what did you just do? And his wife goes, oh yeah, he makes that sound all the time whenever he does stuff. That's such a weird thing though, to have as a trait from your father that you really spent zero time with. You make the same sound when you drop something.
I know, it is so interesting.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to share with people that have or are still going through this childhood trauma and they're now anxious or depressed or don't know which direction to go to change their life? What are your words of wisdom or hope?
I think, oh, you're going to make me cry before I even say anything. Well, I think that if you are going through the healing process, that you have to be very kind and loving to yourself, which I know can be hard because we don't know what love looks like sometimes. But I think we just have to be kind to ourselves because there will be some steps that we speed through and there will be some steps that linger for a very long time of letting go of certain things. But I think we just have to be kind enough to ourselves to know that we will get through this. We will move on. The other side is better. And just holding on to that strength within you. And if you don't feel strong, repeat to yourself, I am strong. And just keep saying it to yourself because eventually it will kick in and you will overcome. Calling ourselves stupid or horrible or not worthy is not going to get us out of that hole. So really holding on to those positive affirmations that I'm strong, I am capable, I am worthy. Life is for me, not against me. I think the most important things that we can do is just to keep our head up and just move forward with some grace.
Where is the place, whether it's in your mind or it's an actual place, where you feel the most loved?
When I can have my whole family on the couch and we can be sitting together watching a funny movie and laughing together is like my most favorite place to be, because laughter is also such a cure that if I can do it with the three of us on a couch snuggled under a blanket, that is just like my happiest place I could be.
I love that. So I do like to ask people that have gone through something and come out the other side three questions. What was the biggest lesson that you have learned through this whole process, the biggest obstacle, and the biggest kindness shown to you? So biggest lesson.
Biggest lesson is don't hold people to expectations they did not agree to.
That's a big one. Mm-hmm. And the biggest obstacle you faced?
I think moving here at the age of 19 and really having to create my own foundation.
And what did that consist of?
I mean, putting a roof over my head. I slept on an air mattress for the first 5 years I lived in Arizona because I couldn't afford a bed. So, you know, it's just really creating those opportunities. I had a car so I could go to work. It's just creating that baseline of how am I going to survive on my own and just trying to move forward. I worked 3 jobs a day because that's what I had to do to make it work.
We're all stronger than we know. And you proved it by doing that. So what was the biggest kindness shown to you during this time when you were trying to heal, trying to find a better life?
You know, God definitely put some good people in my life at very pivotal moments when I really needed something. I have a very good best friend that I met in 4th grade. And her family really took me in a lot of times because they knew what was going on in my house. And her parents still drive their RV out to Arizona every summer to see me and my family. I feel like that was one of the greatest kindnesses they gave me, was a family in a safe place. They call me their adopted daughter. I am part of the family. And if it hadn't been for them, I don't know where I would be today.
That's amazing that you have still kept in touch and they do treat you as a daughter. That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
So you do know what love looks like. It may not have been through your mother, but you learned through other people.
100%. Yes.
Mm-hmm. For people that want to connect with you or be inspired by you more, where could they find you?
I'm on Instagram, Jenna B Spiritual, and I have lots of tips and tricks and positive little affirmations and how to move through life in a better way. And then I also sell positive intention prayer cards on Etsy, and that is also under Jenna B Spiritual.
Well, I'll put that in the show notes as well. And I really want to thank you for being here today and sharing such a personal journey and a tough one at that. But I'm so glad you did, because it gives people so much inspiration that they can also overcome their childhood trauma and live this wonderful life, a life filled with love and laughter and just positive things. You never know what's coming in the future. There's so many exciting possibilities, like you discovered finding your father and connecting. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. I feel like we all have more in common than we actually allow ourselves to acknowledge sometimes. So I love sharing my story. Thank you for having me.
Be sure and follow Open Minded Healing so you'll get every new episode as soon as it's released each Tuesday. You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.